Minnesota Reads on KUMD is funded in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Joining us this morning from the cities is Alan Love. He's the author of a book called Beyond the Meme, Development and Structure in Cultural Evolution. Alan, we don't normally try to combine forecasts and weather stuff with Minnesota Reads, for example, but you said that it has been very interesting. You said you spent an interesting night down in the cities. And in case folks have travel plans down to that area today, what's your recommendation about that?
I think that they should wait. That's probably the best strategy.
Wow. So you said a lot of, you said the plow just went through, but there's a lot of shoveling on everybody's plate down in the metro.
That's correct.
Wow. Okay. So in between reading information about weather and passing that sort of thing along, the first thing I needed to do was look up, and I apologize, I looked it up on the internet, which is usually a frequently a good starting point when you need to learn something new. When we think of a meme, we think of those goofy little internet things, usually a photo with a funny caption that goes around and that people share, or they like the photo and then everybody puts their own caption with it. But there is actually such a thing as meme theory.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is, apparently, that it is cultural information spread by imitation. And Richard Dawkins put forth the theory that memes are kind of like biological genes. And this, yeah. I guess, is this as good as any as a starting point to take a look at your book and how a layman might understand it and might incorporate the ideas into their everyday life?
Yes, I think that's a great place to start. In fact, the computer sort of meme of the present that my children are always reminding me of is a much more recent invention. It bears some similarity to that original idea, but Dawkins was the person who advanced this potentially quite intriguing idea that there might be a unit of culture, just like there is a unit in biology, the gene, that plays a key role in passing traits along to others and helping them be stable and sort of have a structure that passes from one person to the next generation to generation. However, unfortunately, over the past few decades, people have struggled in what you described as meme theory to really find anything like structure that genes have that help us do all that explaining in biology. And so it hasn't done, meme theory has kind of come up empty.
So your book takes a look at What do we do in place of that? Do we abandon meme theory altogether? What does book look at?
It's a good question. We titled the book Beyond the Meme on purpose because we wanted to see this as something that is moving forward. It's not so much a beating up on the concept of the meme as looking for what else we might be able to use to explain how cultural patterns of change occur. So the subtitle of the book, Development and Structure in Cultural Evolution, points to sort of those two broad areas that we focus on. One, development. How do you get cultural patterns to sort of grow and take shape? When people learn how to read, they don't learn how to read in a day. They learn through a process of people reading to them, being explicitly instructed in school. There's a developmental process to the passing on of that culture. So we wanted to capture that. And then the structure, more broadly, is just all of those features, institutions, technology, social groups that make it possible for cultural patterns to, again, be reliably passed on from one context to the next. So the whole book is about exploring different elements of development and different elements of structure to better understand and explain cultural evolution, its change over time, in a way that meme theory just can't do.
I hope that it isn't horrendously shallow, that the first thing I think about as I, you know, just read the little bit about meme theory to try to get a little bit of a background, and as I'm hearing you talking about it now, is the idea, for example, that fashion trends, we've always talked about how fashion trends begin on the East and the West Coast, and they gradually somehow move inward to the Midwest. And by the time they finally get here, of course, things have moved on either coast. And it seems as though, in particular now, with our immediate access in real time and with video to one another, that we're obviously spreading a lot of this information through direct contact with one another.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, and that's one of the reasons why we think paying attention to structure makes a big difference, because it seems like the our ability to see those patterns of culture, like fashion trends, move so much more quickly isn't so much because there are things called memes moving more quickly. It seems like what's more important is to understand those technological inventions that allow for the communication to occur.
The delivery mechanism, so to speak.
Delivery mechanisms, right? So if you're going to understand it, the understanding comes from paying attention to the dynamics of those delivery mechanisms.
And it's interesting, too, the people who continue, there are still people who continue to take pride in the fact that they perhaps do not have a smartphone, or they don't watch television, or that they have, in essence, deliberately turned their back on some of these delivery mechanisms, either because they're suspicious of the content or they're not 100% comfortable with the mechanisms themselves.
Well, that might be the case, and I think it points towards something that we wanted to get at with the diverse contributions in this book, which is culture is very, very heterogeneous. Lots of different people do lots of different things all over the world. And we want to make sure that when we go to try and understand patterns of cultural change, we don't end up ignoring or setting aside large chunks of that because our theoretical apparatus, so in this case, you know, if all we had was meme theory, and meme theory handles the spread of, say, advertising jingles pretty well, but doesn't do so well with how knowledge, say, in the sciences is created and communicated or something else, then there would be a big problem with our inability to capture those diverse elements. So part of why we want to introduce both development and structure in is because there's lots of forms of development and lots of forms of structure that are going to be relevant for all these different patterns of culture that we see, some of which are more familiar to us because we participate in them, some of which are less familiar to us because other people are participating in them and we are not engaged with that, at least at this point in time.
Right now, we are looking at a society where it feels as though, and there's constant conversation about this, that our society is divided, that our society is polarized. Somehow, it would seem our cultural patterns perhaps have been all along evolving in perhaps different directions. One section of society has kind of been evolving in this direction. The other section perhaps has been evolving in this direction. And suddenly perhaps these two groups or three group four, whatever, however, are finding themselves in opposition to one another. Do you look at this in our society, do you look at this schism right now? Does that seem to you to be part of this conversation about how patterns develop how they are passed on to other people?
I mean, I think that the kinds of patterns that we observe today, say, in social and political culture surrounding polarizing views and pretty intense political divisions are certainly exactly the kind of patterns that we want to be able to give an account of. We want to be able to understand why they may have changed, in what ways the technology, for example, contributes to that, in what way maybe other factors contribute to that, like human psychology and the way we have tendencies to reason or see patterns. We want to sort of capture all of those different elements, and the degree to which we're talking about a complex phenomena, namely culture, it's a pretty complex beast, we need all of those resources to understand these patterns and give them a good process explanation. That's one of the reasons why our book is also putting kind of up front interdisciplinarity, because we really feel that a approach that's going to handle this complexity of pattern, whether it's the current sort of politically intense divisions that we experience, or we just want to understand how reading emerged in the Fertile Crescent area thousands and thousands of years ago, we need lots of resources to do that, and those resources come from all kinds of disciplines that have lots of different approaches, and that's the combination of those things that really gives us some grasp on explaining that complexity.
Final question for you. If you were able to find a theory that you felt worked, and of course that's what science is all about in a lot of ways, is coming up with an explanation and applying it, and no, it doesn't work here. So toss that one out. Start again. If you were able to find a theory that seemed to explain this, how culture develops, how ideas and are transmitted to a culture and create cultures at large, what would be, first of all, what would be the best possible use of that information? And secondly, if this was a Marvel movie, what would the evil supervillain be able to do with this information? Which is in essence, it's like, you know, it's meant to be sort of an entertaining question. But by the same token, sometimes we're finding, you know, people use their powers for evil. And then we wish, gosh, I wish I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, I think that for, you know, if we could have that kind of theory, and I think that a lot of what we find in the book is that we're getting pushed towards a perspective where it's probably not going to be a single unifying theory as much as it's going to be a patchwork of different theories that help us do this. And that perspective is maybe helpful in thinking about the potential exploitation that some evil villain might try and take advantage of. In some sense, because culture is so complex and because the theories that we need and we're developing to explain it have lots of different sort of overlapping features, it's unlikely that there is a sort of single silver bullet that somebody will be able to grab onto and then sort of control everything as a consequence of that. I think that what we already see is that in some cases, there have been ways in which people have understood patterns of cultural change, especially in social media, and have capitalized on them in particular contexts, such as elections. But by and large, there are lots of ways in which we simply don't have a good enough understanding for people to use these things to their own advantage or to someone else's harm. And that's part of what we're hoping in this book is to provide some pathways for people to start to better understand these things so that good use can be made of them, especially in domains where the knowledge might be directly applicable to improving people's lives.
Alan, what a fascinating conversation. Thank you so very much for joining us this morning. I really appreciate it. And please take really good care of your back today as you shovel your way out of your snowy home, okay?
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Alan Love is our guest this morning on Minnesota Reads. He is an author of, he is a professor of philosophy and the director of the Minnesota Center for Philosophy of Science at the University of Minnesota. And his book is called Beyond the Meme. Minnesota Reads on Northland Morning is produced with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.